find theirs.
Live does mean in Roman numerals 54, so we all know who that famous football player is, Mr. Brian Urlacher. Is there an Urlacher conspiracy going on?
How long did you take to figure out that live is Roman numerals for 54? We know how much you hate Roman numerals, dude.
Dude, it was like, so when they announced it, I'm like, why are they calling it live? You know, and it was like probably a month after they were talking about it, when an article actually came out and like, oh, it's because, you know, they're only playing 3 days instead of four, and it's 54 holes instead of 72 in a tournament. But yeah, it took me a while. It's like a Saudi-backed sporting group named LIV.
Yeah,
I was like, is it initials?
Who knows?
54,
apparently. Oh, I don't trust what the PGA says.
This isn't a
golf podcast. Now they're all one. Now they're all one. So.
Yeah, you gotta live and let live.
I feel bad for all the players that, you know, stayed behind and wanted to be supportive of the PGA, and in the end they got screwed because all these guys that defected over got checks for some checks for over $100 million. Tiger Woods turned down between $800 and $900 million to be a part of that tour.
I'm just saying,
man, there's no loyalty with corporations. There's no ethical consumption or capitalism. Just take the money. Just give some of it to charity. That's all you can do.
Yep. All right. Great way to start episode 85.
Real fucking light.
a chill light Friday recording. We've got the New York Giants, New York football Giants. We've got the Indianapolis Colts, and we've got the Pittsburgh Steelers today to be reviewed. But let's not waste any time. Let's do our 85s. Ryan, you got any shorties?
Not really. There are a couple of mediums. I mean, I just want to get one guy out of the way. I mean, he's one of the most famous 85s. I'll start with Mr. Antonio Gates.
Ooh.
Antonio Gates, who was an undrafted free agent and had one of the most prolific tight end careers in NFL history.
Oh, yeah.
He played basketball at Kent State in college and ended up being an undrafted free agent in the NFL draft, which was, what, 2003, maybe?
Sounds right.
Yeah, after being told by scouts he was too much of a tweener to make the NBA, Gates arranged a workout in front of NFL scouts, despite never even having played college football. Damn. As many as 19 teams were believed to have contacted Gates about a tryout. Gates chose to work out first for the San Diego Chargers, recognizing the potential. I'm guessing that was because LaDainian Tomlinson was there, right?
Yeah.
Phil Rivers.
So, yeah.
I think that was the transitional period between Breeze and Rivers, too.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. So recognizing his potential, the Chargers like immediately signed him as an undrafted free agent. And I'm not going to go through like all his stats. We've all seen all the crazy stuff from Antonio Gates. What, did he win a Super Bowl?
No.
Our team is
ass. Went to the Pro Bowl a bunch of times.
Sure did.
His career high season was in 2009. 79 passes for 1,157 yards and 8 touchdowns.
Ooh.
Not his most touchdown year. I believe there was a year he had 11.
That's so sick. For an undrafted free agent.
Right. I mean, every year he was getting like over 1,000 yards. Let's see.
He was Travis Kelce before Travis Kelce, especially in fantasy. Like, it's just a cheat code. Like, you just had him. He just whooped everyone's ass.
He was great in Madden 2003, dude.
In his rookie year, he had over 100-yard receiving game.
Not surprised.
In 2015, he became the second tight end and ninth player overall to record 100 career touchdowns. He ranks seventh all time with 116 and leads all tight ends in NFL history. He's probably one of the best tight ends ever to play the game.
He's on the list. He's on the top five for sure.
Yeah. Antonio Gates.
Antonio Gates. Antonio Cemetery Gates. I'm going to hop in here. I'm going to take priority here.
Uh-oh.
Because I really want to talk about a guy that wore jersey number 89, but was drafted in the 85 draft. All right. So we're going to talk about one of the greatest Hall of Fame snubs of the modern era, and arguably the greatest special teams player of all time, Steve Tasker. All right. Okay. Steve Tasker. Let me just set the scene here. He's a real hard hat, lunch pail, gym rat, student of the game, sneaky speed type of guy.
He's white.
He's white. So he was born in Smith Center, Kansas in 1962. Ryan, do you know where in the state Smith Center is?
It's got to be out in like the western part.
It's up north. North Central.
Oh, middle of freaking nowhere.
Yes, the town had 2,400 residents. He's one of three famous people to come from this county. There's a pitcher that went 0-4 in his career, and a paleontologist. All right,
nice.
So he plays college ball at Dodge City Community College, and then finishes his college career. There you go. He finishes his college career at Northwestern. He still, to this day, holds the record at Northwestern for kick return average. So when the football season was over and before the draft, he decided to try to play rugby. And though he had never played rugby before, he was the MVP of the Big Ten Conference Tournament that year.
Really?
Pretty. Sometimes you just stumble into your skill.
Right? So Tasker was not a very productive college receiver, so it wasn't shocking that he didn't get selected until he was picked by Houston in round 9 of the 1985 draft. So he played for 2 years there through injury. He caught 2 passes for 19 yards. Sick. Nice.
Hall of Fame.
Right? So he was a solid kickoff returner, and so when Houston cut him, Buffalo grabs him, and he becomes a legend. Now, there's a little bit of a story here. So in 1985, Houston had fired their tight end coach, and he was pissed about it. So he gets hired in Buffalo, and a couple weeks into the season, he sees Tasker's name on the waiver wire, walks into the head coach, Marv Levy's office, and is like, "You need this guy on our team to make our special teams better." And Levy's like, "All right, sounds good." So when Tasker was in college, he did a little bit of place kicking, as well as kick return and wide receiver. The punter for those Northwestern teams was a guy named John Kidd, who was also the punter in Buffalo at the time. So Kidd, like, he's like, "Hey, welcome to Buffalo. I'll show you the ropes. Here's this, here's that." And they were in the middle of a blinding snowstorm one day after practice and stayed late so the punter could show Steve Tasker how to block a punt. And that same week, Tasker blocked his first career punt against the Patriots.
Nice.
All right. So he plays in Buffalo from 86, the 86 season to 1997. He was like, he's considered the greatest special teams player of all time, but not because of his returning ability. He was a stud gunner on punt coverage and kickoff coverage. So the gunner obviously is the guy that lines out at the very sideline on punts to try to cover the kicks, but he was also the inside gunner on kickoff. So he was the one that would line right up next to the kicker. So he's going in there to just wreck as much shit as humanly possible. He's like 5'9", by the way. He's a small man. he played on punt cover, kickoff cover, punt block, and was occasionally a returner if there were injuries. Bill Parcells told Bill's coach Marv Levy that he spent significant time in the week before the Super Bowl planning to specifically neutralize Steve Tasker. Really? The struggle is that, here's the struggle though, none of the stats for his special teams plays are logged for individual seasons, but his career numbers look pretty amazing. He's considered the first ever true special teams coverage specialist and used his track speed to be the first guy down the field to get the punt returner, force a ton of fumbles, and this dude like threw his body at people. Like reckless shit. Those Bills teams had Andre Reed, James Lofton, and Don Beebe, so Tasker didn't have to play very often on offense. And by the way, before we get too far into this, he was on that Buffalo team that beat the Houston team with Webster Slaughter on it in the playoffs in the greatest comeback in NFL history.
Excellent.
So as his career went on and the depth chart thinned out, Tasker actually put up, this is pretty impressive, 2 seasons in a row where he had at least 20 catches and 3 touchdowns.
Nice.
We love a solid floor play.
All right. So let me give you some career numbers here. 51 catches, 779 yards receiving, 20 carries, 130 rushing yards.
Yeah, who the fuck is Deebo Samuel?
All right, you ready? 204 special teams tackles.
Wow.
How many years did he play?
12.
Okay.
7 blocked punts.
Damn.
7 Pro Bowls as a special teamer. 7 first-team All-Pro selections. And is the only special teams player to ever win Pro Bowl MVP.
So did he like sleep with the president of the NFL commissioner's like wife or something to not, or the Hall of Fame to not get in the Hall of Fame?
Right. So we'll talk about that in a second. By the way, that Pro Bowl MVP, he got 4 tackles, forced a fumble and blocked a field goal in the Pro Bowl. Pretty sick.
That's like the guy who like tryhards at PE. You know what
yes,
I mean? Like,
yes.
I'm going to do wind sprints.
He was part of CBS's football coverage from 1997 to 2018. He was a commentator on CBS from 2014 to 2018. His son played for the Hamilton Ticats and then eventually became an announcer for them. Go Ticats. Steve Tasker's in the Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. He's in the Bills Ring of Honor. But in 2022, he was not voted into the Hall of Fame in his last year of regular eligibility. He can still get in as like a legacy selection, but it's not the same. He runs a Christianity and sports podcast these days.
He should have prayed harder.
Those things go together?
Apparently. So here's how I'd like to end. I want to ask, I'm going to put this out here for you guys because Shane, you already touched on it a little bit. As of right now, there are 3 special teams players in the Hall of Fame. 2 kickers, Morten Andersen and Jan Stenerud, and punter Ray Guy. There are no kick returners. There are no coverage people. And when I say no, you know, no returners, I'm saying no Billy White Shoes Johnson, who was on the NFL's all decade team as a returner in 2 fucking decades.
Yeah.
No Devin Hester.
Yeah, I was going to say, what about Devin Hester? I mean, well, when he probably hasn't had a chance to come up for Hall of Fame ballot yet.
He's been not voted in twice already.
Oh,
Devin
really?
Hester. Yep. This means, sorry, Cordero Patterson, you're not going to make the Hall of Fame. So my question to you guys is, should it be easier for a special teamer to make it to the Hall of Fame?
I think so. There's definitely significant contributions. Look at those guys you just talked about.
I think the problem is it's not sexy, right? You can't sell the product.
Have you ever watched the Devin Hester touchdown montage?
I have, but I'm just saying, like, I'm just saying it's like a highlight package for that guy's thing. It's hard to be like, hey, here's this 157th tackle, right? Like, it's sick to watch the block punts, but I think the way that the NFL markets success or like Hall of Fame caliber things, the product still needs to sell. And it's one of those things where I don't think that the general population won't give a shit about, unfortunately.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think the Hall of Fame should be easier to get into because there's plenty of people that, I mean, like wide receivers, there's a huge clog at wide receiver for Hall of Fame stuff. Yeah. So many guys aren't in there that should be that, like, I don't know. It's the Hall of Fame. Who cares? But I know it probably means a lot to these dudes. And I think Steve Tasker is worthy of the gold jacket.
See, but that's why we do this podcast, is to memorialize people who are slept on, right? So when we're in the annals of podcast Hall of Fame in 7 years, you're like, all right, here's your flowers. We talked about you on episode 85.
Yeah. Couldn't have done it without you, Steve Tasker. So that's my 85, Steve Tasker.
Nice.
All right. I'll do my next one. Shane can go last.
Right on.
Shane's headlining.
yeah. So at number 85, a very old player he's born in 37. He played with the Rams. I know Antonio Gates is a bigger name, but I want to talk about Del Schaffner.
Del Schaffner. Okay.
Yep. Born in 1934. Was a wide receiver for the Rams and the Giants. Played his college football at Baylor. He helped the Baylor Bears to a 13-7 victory over Tennessee in the 1957 Sugar Bowl and was voted game's most valuable player.
So this guy's a tight end, right?
No, wide receiver.
Okay.
Sure. I love how you can pinpoint eras of football with the scores.
Yeah. But or unless you're talking about the Big Ten.
That's true.
He didn't start out, though, as a wide receiver. He started as a defensive back.
Okay.
Playing in 12 games, starting in 10. He intercepted 2 passes while recovering a fumble. Got his chance to play for an offense as a split end the next season. He made it count, playing 12 games, 51 passes, 1,097 yards, and 8 touchdowns.
Damn. This is your second. This is your second guy that played defensive back with a number in the 80s. And I just want to go on the record and saying a DB with a jersey number in the 80s is so fucking sick. I can't even handle it.
Great. So that was with the Rams. In 61, he was traded to the Giants for draft picks. He was acquired by the famous Mara family. Because Y.A. Tittle influenced the Maras to get this guy because they liked his talent, or because Tittle liked his talent. And that year, it proved really good. He got 69 passes for 1,125 yards and 11 touchdowns.
Damn.
He was the first ever New York Giant to have a 1,000-yard season, and he would soon become the first to do it in consecutive seasons. He did it the next season, too. In the NFL championship game against the Packers, however, was not good. They were shut out 37-0.
Oof.
Yeah. He only had 3 passes for 41 yards. And like most older players from the NFL, this guy retired in the 60s. So naturally, he went on to have a successful business career selling animal feed ingredients.
Yay! There we go.
You know, people have to get real jobs. They weren't making that FU money.
Right.
But yeah, quick shout out to Del Schaffner.
I love that name, Del Schaffner.
Dude, you're getting Del.
What's it short for? Deltron?
1,000.
It's Delbert.
Delbert. The creator of Delbert has been canceled.
We got to bring it back, dude.
Delbert Martin Schaffner.
Okay. DMS. All right, Shane, what do you got? Give us your 85.
All right. So there's a lot of greats at 85. And I was like, okay, some of these are too easy. And I couldn't find every example of Ocho Cinco being super frugal to fill the time slot. So I was just like, you know what, let's go with someone who's kind of interesting from like a human perspective. So my 85 is Reggie Langhorn, or as Chris Berman would boomerly refer to him as, Foghorn Langhorn.
Yeah. I fucking hate Chris Berman. I fucking hate Chris Berman. I'll go. That's an unpopular opinion. I'll own it. I hate Chris Berman.
I loved him in the baseball games, the video games from like the 2000s.
Back.
Gone. Oh, yeah. Because you want maniacs in baseball, because baseball is a hard sport to engage with. So you want a loud mouth person.
Yeah.
So Reggie played a total of 9 seasons in the NFL, starting with the Browns, where he was drafted in 85 in the 7th round at pick 175. He primarily played out of the slot and played with running back Eric Metcalf, who as of right now is not related to DK Metcalf, even though he and his father do believe there is some form of family history that overlaps.
They do believe, or they know.
They believe, we could be cousins, or like your uncle could be like my aunt's nephew or whatever, right? They believe that there's some.
That ancestry.com thing, find out.
I had to do a little reconnaissance. I was like, he's clearly related to it, but apparently not, like as of right now. So while in Cleveland, he didn't really break any ground. He averaged roughly 40-ish catches per year with around 600 yards, so nothing stellar. So after 7 seasons with the Browns, he was ultimately let go and signed with the Colts, where he put up his best receiving numbers. In 92, he put up 65 catches for 811 yards. In 1993, he had 85 catches for 1,083 yards. And Reggie would finish his 9-year career with 19 touchdowns.
All right.
So even though he had his best career year, but the Colts were unfortunately cursed with rebuilding again, which seems to be a common theme within our podcast. They had a big roster purge and were basically dumping anybody who wasn't pertinent to the rebuild that was making over $1 million. And he already prepared a letter of resignation saying that he needed a break from the game and he would retire shortly thereafter. So the break was actually stemming from his current alcohol addiction that began when he moved to Indy, as he saw himself feeling more isolated, missing his friends, family, and former teammates, going from one Midwest town to the other. So Reggie actually failed the drug test in the offseason that would have suspended him for 4 games, but instead he retired because he was so ashamed that his mom would find out and he didn't want to be an embarrassment to his family.
Oh, that's wholesome.
Yeah, so he said, you know what, dude? Fuck this. So the struggle with sobriety was a long one for Langhorne, as retirement didn't really solve his depression and alcoholism. During this time, he was hit by a car while riding his bike to the liquor store and was hospital 7 times in 14 months with a blood disorder.
Oh my God.
But fortunately, Langhorne moved back to Cleveland to try and reset his mind and have a good support system. As former teammate and friend Kevin Mack put him into a program after Reggie failed out of rehab for the first time. And eventually it worked. It stuck with him. And Langhorne would go on to say, when I got to Cleveland as a rookie, 7th round draft choice in 1985, I was coachable. I wanted it and I put everything into getting it. That's how I approach sobriety now. It's a never ending cycle and I got to stay with it. So at one point, Langhorne opened a bar and grill in Virginia with a partner called McNamara's Grill and Pub that had moderately priced menus consisting of steak, pasta, seafood, and veal with authentic memorabilia and 11 widescreen TVs. Ultimately,
burying the lead. You're burying the lead.
Ultimately, sold the business, and Langhorne is going on his 20th year as president of the Eddie Johnson Memorial Foundation, which is a charity focuses on grants, donations, and costs associated with physical therapy, rehabilitation, and hospital medical bills. And their website is currently not working, so I don't know how legitimate the organization is to this day, but it was on this Wikipedia page.
Is it medical bills only for people that were hit by cars while going to the liquor store, or is this just like a broad? Yeah,
and if you went to the hospital 13 times, it didn't count.
Nope. You got to have it as hard as he had it.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. So I think that's it, right? We've got our 85s done.
We're in chunky season, so we kind of had to make them a little bit shorter.
Yeah, we made them a little bit shorter. Let's take a break real quick. We'll come back. I'll do the Steelers, and then we'll go from there. And goodbye. Hey, friends. Tony from TH Fantasy here with a quick programming note. Just to remind you, what we're going to be doing going forward is we're going to be splitting the summer research episodes up into 2 smaller bits
for your listening enjoyment,
because I don't know how many people have time to listen to 2 hours of football talk in their lives, not to mention just in one sitting. So what we'll be doing is we'll do our number of the week in our first episode, and our second episode will be the last 2 of our 3-team reviews for the week. Hopefully you guys enjoy. We put together a ton of research on them, and if you have anything you want to add or tell us that we're wrong about, please reach out. Just make sure you are subscribing and giving us money, because that's really important. Thanks. We're back, and it's time to go 9-8 with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I am so ready.
Pittsburgh's gonna finish better than 500, huh?
No. Well,
Mike Tomlin better hope so for his career.
Yeah, right. So let's talk Steelers. I've got some good stuff here. I hope you enjoy, and I'm not even going to waste any time. So we'll start with the quarterbacks. PFF is all in on Kenny Pickett as a year 2 breakout candidate based on his strong last 7 weeks of the season. And I don't know about you guys, but it feels like the last couple weeks I've seen a lot of hype about Pickett. He's going to take the next step. He's going to be a viable fantasy quarterback this year. So those last 7 weeks were supposed to be like the sign of things to come. But in those last 7 weeks, he never finished above QB 15 in fantasy. And he never threw more than one touchdown in a game last year.
Yeah, didn't he average like 16 points a game?
Yeah, I'm going to let everyone else experiment with him and redraft. I don't know.
All right, here we go. His per game averages were 18 completions on 29 attempts for 184 yards and not even one full touchdown.
Bro, that is the most mid-sentence I've ever heard in my life.
From a purely statistical and fantasy standpoint, in terms of per game fantasy output, that puts him around Zach Wilson. And
it's like Kyle Orton numbers.
Well, it's also 1.4 fantasy points per game below Shane's personal hero, Taylor Heinicke.
Yeah. What the fuck, bro? Hold my nuts on this one, dude.
So credit where credit's due. He does get a minimal boost to his fantasy production because of where he's rushing, because he's going to get you 2 to 3 extra points a week and the occasional touchdown. He had actually boom games as a runner against New Orleans. He had 8 carries for 51 yards and a touchdown. But then, like, for every one of those games, there's 6 games, like the Atlanta one where he ran 7 times for 14 yards. Like,
do you have his rushing average or his rushing totals at the end of the year?
It was less than 300 yards.
Sorry, like the amount of attempts.
I would have to split it up between scrambles and designed runs because I feel like most of it's on scrambles.
See, having good rushing abilities?
Yeah. Dude, when he was in college, his last, like in the bowl game, he was the guy that did that fake slide when he was running down the field.
And they banned the move.
Yeah, they banned it. Kenny Pickett.
Said 55 attempts on Sleeper.
Okay, that sounds about right.
He's a rushing quarterback, according to J.J. Zacharyson.
He's, yeah, real hard hat lunch pail. So year two in the system, even though it's Matt Canada's terrible system, it'll give him a boost because he just knows the playbook better. But the fantasy utility just isn't there unless he takes like a Trevor Lawrence type leap.
But didn't he like the last 7 weeks like say he couldn't hear him through his headset? Like he blatantly did what Canada told him not to do.
Yeah, I kind of remember that. Yeah.
And that and we'll see, you know, we'll see how it goes this year. So Pickett's value in a real life football sense is that he doesn't turn the ball over. And I took a closer look and it's a fucking miracle that that's the case. He was second in the NFL in for quarterbacks in what were called danger plays, which is what Player Profile labels as plays where the quarterback took an unnecessary risk that could have led to a turnover. So like he was second in those. So somehow his weird variance, like he just got super lucky. So for fantasy, he's not a sexy play. I went ahead and looked to see how the Steelers wanted to help Pickett. They added Broderick Jones in the first offensive tackle. They added unofficial 6th offensive lineman Darnell Washington. they signed Isaac Sumalo from Philly to completely revamp the left side of their offensive line. So their whole left side is new. So then I looked into it and I'm like, man, maybe Kenny Pickett was just under a ton of pressure. Nope. 19th most hurries per game among starting quarterbacks last year, 15th in pressures per game, 20th in sacks taken. He had the second lowest percentage of pass attempts where he was hurried in the first 3 seconds of his dropback. He had time.
Doesn't that show you the defenses are just not scared of him? They're like, yes. Let him cook. We don't care. He's going to bring us oatmeal.
Yep. So he'll have more time to pass with improvements on the offensive line, but this offense is built to run. I'm not drafting Kenny Pickett because even if he's good, the level of good he can be is marginal and not really worth it. He's a quarterback too. He's a cheap super flex option unless he takes a major step forward, but I'm not seeing anything that makes it a solid bet this year. So, gentlemen, Kenny Pickett on 4-for-4 right now is quarterback 25. Would you rather have to start the year Kenny Pickett or Brock Purdy?
Ouch.
As of today, or do I know Brock Purdy's going to play?
Yeah, right.
Knowing what you know right at this moment.
They said he's taking snaps soon, so.
That'd probably be the only way I would take Pickett in like a redraft would be like if it was between him and Brock Purdy. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, this is what I talk about indie. There's moments where it's like you're so barren at, oh no, it was Mac Jones last week, where you're so barren, you've punted quarterback to the very last round of the draft, and you're like, well, I gotta take somebody. I think I still take Purdy, man, even though he might not even play. Like, there will be other waiver wire QBs there where I can be like, all right, I missed out, I can try again.
True. All right, well, there's probably just more opportunity, I think, for Pickett to pass in Pittsburgh than it is in Frisco. McCaffrey and everything.
Unfortunately, I'm not done. Kenny Pickett or Ryan Tannehill?
Oh, God. This is the worst Friday vibe kill, dude.
Who's it going to be? Kenny Pickett or Ryan Tannehill?
I'm going to go with Tennessee is going to pay DeAndre Hopkins millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Good
and
point.
He's just going to retire there, and they're just going to run him out of the slot. So I'm going Tannehill.
Okay. Ryan?
I'd like the Tannehill argument too, especially if Hopkins goes there. We got Treylon Burks.
He's also kind of playing for his career too.
We got Derrick Henry, who's an old man, probably won't play half of the year, you know?
I got a fun last one for you. Kenny Pickett or C.J. Stroud?
Ooh.
These are all terrible decisions.
I'm bold, so I'll go with Stroud.
Yeah, dude, third overall pick. He's going to have a shit start to the beginning of the season, but, I mean, I'd rather swing for the fences of above 16 points a game.
Sure. All right, so let's have fun. Let's get into the good shit. So let's talk running back, and let's acknowledge right now that we can't start any discussion about this without praising Najee Harris as a dude that had not only a heroic workload his first year, but managed to play all 17 games in 2022 with a Lisfranc sprain as well as oblique and hip injuries.
Damn.
Dog.
He had Anne Frank's sister disease.
There it is. Elizabeth Frank. So I know sometimes he looked like Ezekiel Elliott, but he still managed over 1,000 yards on 272 carries as well as 53 targets, which he turned into 41 catches. You cannot argue against that kind of work rate. And this year, the Steelers have three dramatic upgrades on the offensive line, with Jones was the second highest ranked run blocking and tackle in the class. Sumalo from Philly is a huge upgrade as well. Pittsburgh ran for under 4 yards a carry on the left side of both of their interior gaps. So bringing in a guy from Philly that crushed it last year is going to be a clear improvement. In those gaps, those two gaps that Sumalo manned last year, Philly got 4.5 yards a carry. Damn. And in Pittsburgh, it was like 3.8. So that's a big fucking improvement. After their bye last year, Pittsburgh became the 9th best rushing attack in the NFL. And I think this is what crosses into next year for Najee. He was 5th in the league in carries last year. He was 6th amongst running backs with 46 red zone touches. And with the offense trending towards an improved blocking system, I think Najee has a chance to repeat even with slightly diminished projected volume. So I can't really finish on Najee without talking about Jalen Warren. So last year he was a rookie. He flashed a little bit near the end as both a spellback for Najee, and he looked decent with his own extended work. As of right now, he's actually kind of a hot name in training camp. He's been picking up buzz in fantasy circles. I saw a recent article on The Athletic which talked about how the Steelers were looking for ways to have them both on the field at the same time, which makes no sense to me because they do the same fucking thing.
That's a Steeler way,
right?
We do one thing and do it well.
That's it. That's all. Can you do this? Yeah. Okay. So Tomlin is historically a bell cow back type of guy. Like, we know this, but I think the carry distribution is continuing to change a little bit sneakily since Tomlin is, you know, trying to evolve as a coach. James Conner was the bell cow when healthy before, but then, so like Najee's rookie year, 307 carries. Benny Snell had 36.
Yeah.
Okay. Last year, Najee 272, Warren had 77.
So that's interesting because it's like, do you think that's because like they were worried about the injury? Like, did that snap share start in the beginning of the year or the end of the year? Can you?
It was pretty. It picked up closer to the end of the year when I think the injuries were mounting.
Okay.
But I can still easily see a world this year where Najee still gets 250 carries and Warren can get around 100, still about the same overall total amount. Based on last year, if Najee got 250 carries, that's still top 10 running back workload by volume. With an improved offensive line, even with a little bit of diminished volume, probably more health near the end of the year, I think Najee's a beast. Warren could also be a sneaky stash in redraft this year if you have a deeper league or like a longer bench. His advanced rush metrics are top 12 in true yards per carry, which is all runs minus any run that went over 10 yards. So the goal is to see how consistent are you at putting up 5-6 yards a carry. Jalen Warren was top 12 in that, and he was top 11 in yards per touch with 5.6. So here's why you're going to want Najee Harris, all right? Let me tell you, they're playing, they go against Houston, last year's worst run defense. They have a game against Arizona, who was the league's third worst run defense last year. They've got a game against the fourth worst in Seattle, fifth worst in Las Vegas, and two games against the sixth worst, Cleveland.
Oh.
So even if those teams take a step forward defensively, it's still a mighty favorable schedule. So I am here to declare that I am in on Najee Harris, and I think Jalen Warren could have weekly viabilities as a, hey, I'm in a redraft league, two running backs, two wide receivers, we start three flexes. He could be your third flex, even if Harris plays.
Yeah.
And I think he's one of the most premium handcuffs in the league this year. So, go ahead.
I'm assuming you're going to ADP data right now. So
I'm just going to rank him. I'm going to put him out there. So he's running back 13 on 4-for-4 right now. So let me ask you guys, Najee Harris or Aaron Jones?
I think it's Najee, because even though he's like a early third round running back, I think, like you said, that bell cow volume, even though it's higher, it's still like he's not getting his touchdowns vultured by Pickett.
Right. Ryan, what do you think? Harris or Jones?
No, I like Najee, and you sold me on the schedule.
Okay, Najee Harris or Joe Mixon?
I think it's Najee still, because we don't know what's going to happen with Mixon. He could be in prison.
Sure could.
Oh, that's a good point. Forgot about that.
So then Najee for you, Ryan?
Yeah.
Okay, last but not least, Najee Harris or Miles Sanders?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Damn,
gotcha.
Too bad he's the Panthers this week.
Okay, Ryan's on Najee.
Yeah, I think that's true, because, I mean, we've seen that Miles Sanders is also not a pass-catching running back, where Najee can do that. He can get to the check down, so I think his passing game work might bring him up enough. I mean, to me, I think they're going to finish similar, like maybe RB like 8 and like RB 13, right?
Sure.
Range.
And that's 20 points.
Plus Jalen Hurts eats into so many rushing yards.
Sanders is in Carolina now.
Bryce
Young.
That's
right.
Yeah.
More competition.
All right. But once you thought it was over, I'm back at you. Jalen Warren, RB 44 on 4-for-4. So I ask you, gentlemen, Jalen Warren or Kendre Miller?
I like Kendre. But that's just my rookie fever.
Okay.
I'll go Jalen Warren.
All right, last one. Jalen Warren or Elijah Mitchell? I love coming up with these and fucking you guys up. This is my favorite part of research.
I do like Mitchell as a compliment.
I just think he can't stay healthy. Like, he does have those games where, like, he was the running back one, but, like, I just trust... Even though I do trust San Francisco, I think I can't trust the health of Elijah Mitchell. And I'm going good juju with San Francisco this year. Sure. CMC all games.
Okay. All right. So let's go wide receivers. Now, let me start by saying this wide receiver room is a fucking mess. Diontae Johnson in games with Trubisky versus games with Pickett. When Pickett started, he averaged 3 less targets, 3.5 less catches, and 28 yards less a game.
Oh, wow.
This is not a knock on Diontae in any way, since he's still an alpha-level wide receiver in terms of pure talent. I don't think anyone can deny that. He's one of the best route runners in the league. And to be honest, last year, which was a down season, was only regards to touchdowns because, you know, he didn't score at all. But in 2020, when everyone was like, this dude's a league winner, he caught 88 passes for 923 yards. Last year, he caught 86 passes for 882. So it's all about the perception, right? Like, if he scored five touchdowns, we're not talking about him as a buy low. He's due for positive touchdown regression or progression, but I don't think he ends up as a weekly starter this year for your fantasy team unless Mitch comes back in. All three of the games he played with Trubisky, he had double-digit targets.
Yeah, didn't he try to, like, fight Pickett?
Wasn't that there was something about that. Yeah.
Like, one week they just, like, disappeared and he went to the locker room. I was like, yeah, you should fight your quarterback.
Yep. So I hate this. I fucking hate saying this, but I am avoiding Deontay Johnson at cost. Even at wide receiver. Well, I have him at wide receiver 29 on 4-for-4. And I just can't, man. This offense is going to be run, pass. And I don't think you see more than five catches for 50 yards.
Matt Canada just sucks. Like, I hate to fucking just like bury the team, but it's like Matt Canada is just so uninspiring an offensive scheme. It's like he's not going to utilize the guys how they should be used.
Correct. Deontay usually plays outside on the boundary, and he has incredible efficiency at his ADOT's 10.7 yards. And right around that region is when he's most effective. But unfortunately, like the pass breakdown on Pickett's first year shows that like he looks towards the center of the field. That's fucking it. So he's got like tunnel vision almost. So Deontay, who's lined up on the boundary like 90% of the time, has less opportunity to find himself in Pickett's vision window. Deontay has some numbers that you love. He was 6th in targets, 13th in target share, 10th in red zone targets with no touchdowns, 14th in air yards. He was number 2 in the league with 875 unrealized air yards.
Holy shit, dude. He could have been Cooper Kupp.
He's getting looks, but he's got a 6 yard per target and a below 50 ranking in target accuracy. He needs Pickett to make a jump to continue to produce at that cost. So I ask you, gentlemen, Deontay Johnson or Christian Watson?
I think it's Deontay for me.
Yeah, it's got to be Deontay. I don't know what's going to happen with Jordan Love.
All right. Deontay Johnson or Treylon Burks?
You know our boy, bro. Like Treylon Burks. I'm going to get hurt again. I don't give a shit, dude.
All right. Deontay Johnson or Jordan Addison?
This is spoilers for when you cover Minnesota, but it's Addison for me.
Wow. I'll probably go Deontay.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. George Pickens, a respectable 82 targets last year. 52 catches, 801 yards, and 4 touchdowns. He had a top 3 average depth of target at 14.5. 30 of his 82 targets were charted by PFF as more 20 or more yards down the field from the line of scrimmage. Pickett actually loves throwing the deep ball, and that's where Pickens is best. He was 7th in the league in deep targets, and obviously, you know, you expect him to take that progression in year 2. So he caught 16 of those 30 targets and had over 450 yards on those 16 catches. And you know what sets up long bombs, right? Good running game and the play action pass. So I think about the flexibility that Darnell Washington gives you as a blocker to make those play action passes well protected. And you could go either way. He could block, he could release, whatever. I think Pittsburgh might have the most dangerous play action offense in the league, not RPO based, Shane, before you say something.
I'm not going to spoil my teams. So, but yeah, that's fair.
So when there's play action pass in Pittsburgh, those passes aren't going 10 yards downfield to Deontay Johnson. They're going 15 yards downfield to George Pickens. I think he's a guy that you draft, you stash on your bench, and you could start based on matchup. But my guess is that before the season is over, Pickens will be the alpha wide receiver on this roster.
I mean, that's how Pittsburgh operates, right? It's like correct. We draft a guy, we let him go. We draft correct. Another guy, we let him go.
Pickens, obviously not an elite separator, and he won't get a ton of volume, but he has the potential to really break out in year 2. So, gentlemen, George Pickens is wide receiver 51 on 4-for-4. Would you rather have George Pickens or Tyler Boyd?
Ooh,
that's a tough one.
Tyler Boyd.
I think it's Boyd, man, because Boyd, even though he's like not sexy, something's going to happen with one of those wide receivers week to week, and Joe Burrow gives him like the pity 80 targets a year of like, hey, dog, I appreciate your time here before I was here, so like, here's your targets.
Okay. Right. George Pickens or Alan Lazard?
Oh, Pickens.
I don't know, man. Probably go Pickens.
Like, okay. this is not like a slight on anybody who's like, I like Alan Lazard, but like, why the fuck would you draft Alan Lazard in fantasy football? there's so many better choices.
Speaking of why the fuck would you draft this guy in fantasy football, where the hell does this leave Allen Robinson? Well, Allen Robinson has historically ran somewhere between 28 to 36% of his routes from the slot, but my math seems to indicate there's only two boundary spots on the football field at any given time. You got Deontay on one side, you got Pickens on the other. They don't really run out of the slot. And I also am of the belief that Allen Robinson is fucking dust.
I honestly thought he retired. As soon as you said his name, I'm like, why are we talking about the Rams? I totally forgot that he was on the Steelers.
He is an aging wide receiver coming off an Elizabeth Frank injury. Anne Frank's sister, of course. It's in the sequel. You might not have read it. He's had two terrible seasons. I hope he's still good because, you know, I'm a Bears fan. I love Allen Robinson. But I think Pittsburgh would be better off giving slot work to Calvin Austin, who may be smaller but is fucking electric. Since Mike Tomlin hates fun, I could probably just assume Allen Robinson fits into that Chase Claypool big slot role with like no pop or excitement at all. So I don't want Allen Robinson, and you don't either.
Would you say, I know Pittsburgh has a winning record usually, but is Pittsburgh the most boring team in the NFL?
Yeah. To watch, to sit down and watch. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Pickens does have some cool ass highlight reels, but like, that's just because he's a maniac and I love George Pickens cause he's a dog, but like, yeah, sitting down to watch Pittsburgh games, I'm like, I feel like I'm doing homework.
Uh-huh. It feels like I'm listening to, like, a book someone recommended me.
But they do have a lot of fans, though, so that does make up for it.
The best fans. Okay, so let's end it on a high note. This is where it gets interesting. Darnell Washington, sixth offensive lineman. He's going to pop once or twice a year. You fucking know he is. He's going to catch two passes for 20 yards and a touchdown. Like, but he, like I've been saying since fucking April, much better real life football player due to positional versatility than like fantasy asset. So I entered the research process on Pat Freiermuth looking for any reason to not love his potential. So here's what I found. Well, his strengths are in the middle of the field, which we talked about earlier as Pickett between 0 to 10 yards in the middle of the field. That is his fucking money. And that is where Pat Freiermuth fucking kills it. 45 of the 60 passes thrown to him between 0 to 10 yards in the middle of the field, Freiermuth caught him. So this is strength meets strength, right? The simplification of the shifting nature of Pittsburgh under Pickett is how splits show an almost one-to-one correlation between targets that went to Deontay to targets that went to Pat Freiermuth. They all just went there instead.
Man, that's so depressing.
Right? Hey, you know what? Instead of the really good route runner that's electric with the ball in his hands, let's throw it to the fucking Purdue tight end that runs like a 12-second 40-yard dash. He has a minuscule 8.3 depth of target. But to be honest, that's Pickett, right? It's a short route or he's going deep to George Pickens. I don't think Pat Freiermuth becomes a top three tight end this year, but I think he's a top tier blob guy that will end up getting you 4 to 5 catches for 50 yards and the occasional touchdown. Essentially, he's getting what Deontay would get you, with maybe even with some more consistency, but you're going to get him cheaper than Deontay Johnson for the same production. I'm giving him a boost over his yearly averages since I think the run first and play action bootleg nature of this offense leans more closely towards Freiermuth this year. So I'm penciling him in at about 70 catches for 775 yards and about 5 touchdowns, which would put him at tight end 6.
Damn.
So Pat Freiermuth, tight end 11 on 4-for-4. So gentlemen, Pat Freiermuth or David Njoku?
I don't like Cleveland, so Freiermuth.
Okay. Okay.
Can I pick not? I've never drafted Njoku, and there's just something about Freiermuth, man. Even with those data points, I just like, he's just like king of the blob, and he just grosses me out. So I guess I got to go king of the blob.
Okay. Pat Freiermuth or Dalton Schultz?
Oh.
I'm going Muth.
Yeah, talent ceilings there, and who knows what's going to happen in Houston.
Last but not least, Pat Freiermuth or Evan Engram?
I think it's Engram.
I'm still going. The Muth is loose.
All right, the Muth is loose. We have the Pittsburgh Steelers are done. Market zero. That's Pittsburgh. So we'll end the first episode here. We'll come back next week for part two, or the same day, depending on how shit gets uploaded. And we will do the New York Football Giants, and we will do the Indianapolis Colts, which I'm sure is what a selling point. What a selling point for people. Hey,
listen, we're going to talk about a lot of Philly. So if you like Philly, it'll be in there.
All right. Come back for Philly. Good night.